morning. Welcome into another episode of Big Talk College Sports with Midwest Perspective, Blue Collar and Blue Blood. I'm Dalton Shetler, joined by Burger King himself, Sam Sprunger. Sam, how are we doing?
I am fabulous, thank you. No, it's great. I love the weekend. I get to have fun.
For just the audio listening audience, we have a BK crown on Sam. He quickly ran and threw that on during the intro. Anything inspired, or we're just feeling wacky here this week?
Just feeling fun and festive today, so okay, therefore I'm wearing a crown for the first minute of the show.
Good vibes only here at Big Talk, where we're going to get into a couple of things.
I figured we needed something to talk about.
That's not a bad idea. Way to buy us a minute there. Well, and that's part of the thing Sam and I were talking about. Obviously, it's a little bit lighter of a load in content for Big Ten sports now. I mean, as far as spring sports go, gearing up for the NCAA tournament for lacrosse. Currently have the
you
NCAA
mean the
tournament.
Big Ten champion Johns Hopkins Blue Jays?
That's right. And then you have golf taking place in the NCAA tournament. Big Ten softball tournament is set. That's coming up. Big Ten baseball's got 2 weeks left of regular season play. So we're gearing down towards the end of the spring. And, of course, much of the talk still exists around the transfer portal. Now that the window has closed, we have somewhat more of an idea of what these football and basketball rosters look like. Now, teams can still add players, but those players have got to be in the portal. They cannot enter the portal at this point.
Unless by chance, some chance their coach leaves. Like if the rumor of Calipari to the Lakers happens, all those Arkansas commits get to go back into the portal.
Yeah. Could you imagine moving twice within a few weeks like that?
Can you imagine alienating two basketball fan bases just like that?
Crazy. But hey, that's what this time of the year is for. A bunch
Coach
of
Cal be Coach Cal.
Yeah. but as far as things to talk about for this show, one of the things, given the time period we're in and what we just outlined, that I was curious to talk a little bit about with Sam and to see maybe what listeners thought here was the WNBA season tips off next week. Now, it's no secret I've got a pretty big vested interest in women's basketball, especially at the college level and Big Ten. I love basketball in general, but I have a pretty big vested interest in the women's game. With the WNBA starting on Tuesday, regular season will start, preseason currently going on. I'm curious how people will find their way to these games, because some of these are going to be platformed on the network cable stations. I mean, these are going to have opportunities to do big things. And the reason I set this up, Sam, is because we just went through a historic run in the NCAA tournament with ratings. The Elite Eight matchup between Iowa and LSU broke all women's basketball records. And then came the Final Four game.
Yeah.
And Iowa-UConn broke that record. And then came the championship game, and Iowa-South Carolina broke that record again. Yep. It was an average of, 18.9 million viewers watching that game, and it peaked around 24 million viewers. So this is something – it felt like for a long time the discourse and narrative was built around maybe doing – you help out, help support, do good, help with the women's game – and now there's something tangible there when you're talking about 24 million people tuning into a women's basketball game. And that's more than the NBA has seen in the last 5 years. It's more than any men's basketball game has seen in the last 5 years. So you're talking about something that is a really big deal. Like, things have shifted in terms of viewership with this. Will it catapult its way to the WNBA is the big question.
Eventually it will. I don't doubt that it will. And here's a bunch of conversation about how much money the WNBA players make, and Kelsey Plum going out and saying, we're not asking for the same amount, we're asking for the same amount of revenue sharing that they get. And there are things more than that going on. And it's, you know, the right now the WNBA is still being subsidized by the NBA. But as you just said, you're starting to see the upswing to where, you know, games are being records being set. Well, those players are now getting into the WNBA. They're going to bring a bunch of new unfettered WNBA fans that weren't there originally. Right, wrong, or indifferent, but it's great for the game for the aspect of it growing. the WNBA is getting ready to celebrate their 25th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And how long's the NBA been around? For 80 years plus, right? 75 at least, right? Because wasn't it the 75-year team just here recently? But my whole point on that is until the 1980s, the NBA was still playing its finals games on tape delay.
Yeah.
It wasn't a viable league. And then you had Magic. Then you had Bird. Then you had Michael. Then you had all of these stars coming in. Now you have all the stars that are there now. Now, I would contest that it's not nearly as popular in the excitement for the game as it was back then, but it is still, it's a developed and established league way further than what the WNBA is. So the WNBA is still making its way there. And I didn't mean to bring up that they're being subsidized by the NBA to downgrade it. It's they need that to be able to survive to get to the point of viability. And right. I think Clark and Cardozo and all the ones that are in Reese that all drafted this year are helping the WNBA get to the point where they can now start seeing some viability. They just announced they're going to start chartering flights. That's $25 million a year. Well, guess what? It has to be because companies are seeing these players come in and they're willing to put money into the league now. So it becomes more viable.
And there's a huge talking part of this too when we discuss the revenue part of this, because it is a real thing, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's a very real part of the formula that's made the WNBA work for so long. But now that you have such tangible numbers, as we just ran through with what we've just seen, and I think a lot of us expect that to continue on to the WNBA because, I mean, for the Indiana Fever, where Caitlin Clark is playing, two TV markets, I think, in Iowa have picked up the Indiana Fever games.
Because of that.
Yeah, like it's growing in into different states. Like it's becoming a really big deal. And those numbers we gave you, that's not just rising. That's better than any basketball game you've had in 5 years,
for
NBA
sure.
or men's basketball or whatever. Like that's a big deal. So I think when we talk about the fact that the WNBA went ahead and moved forward with the charter flights, which has been a conversation for some time.
Right.
I think you're seeing the WNBA, I don't even want to say bet on itself, because I think it's
they're taking loans out on their future.
Exactly. Because there's a media rights deal coming up here soon. And that should just do some big numbers relative to what it's been in the past. That media rights deal could really help fund many of the different things that are taking out. And you're right. That's exactly what it is. It's a loan for the future because they know that media rights deal is going to be whopping compared to what they've seen in the past. And so they're starting to level up the league and level up their resources.
And I guarantee you, this isn't me thinking it will happen. I guarantee you salaries will go up once that media deal comes, because all of a sudden you're going to see the WNBA not needing as much of, or if any of, the NBA money to subsidize it. And I saw somebody do the math, because they, you know, they're every year the WNBA at this time loses $10 million a year. That's why the NBA subsidizes them. So they said, actually, if you want the same revenue sharing, because they were using the quote from Kelsey Plum, is every basketball player in the WNBA owes $83,000 then, because that's the equal share of revenue that you're getting. So right. The fact, and I'm not saying you take the salary and be happy with it, and we lost Dalton, but my point on that one my whole point on that, Dalton,
sorry,
that's all right, is, you know, not be happy, but understand that, you know, Caitlin Clark made the statement during a press conference that she thanked all of these players that were in the WNBA that paved the way. She's still paving the way.
Yep.
Now, granted, she's seeing a huge step because she got a 7-figure deal from Nike to be able to have shoes. Okay, so great. That's a step that no other WNBA athlete has seen. We're making progress to where they're going to be paid fairly according to their revenue. Okay, and I see that we're still paving the way. She's still paving the way, but she's seeing a lot of the benefit that Rebecca Lobo and Tamika Catchings, all of those WNBA stars prior, Cheryl Swoops, all of them, put up for. They were making what, 30 grand a year to go play professional basketball. They had to go overseas to play. I mean, you know, there are still some players, I think, that, or at least until recently, that still took the offseason and went overseas to play in another league.
Yep.
That's, you're going to see less and less of that. And these players have those women to thank. But yep, we're still paving the way. We're not there yet. You can't just go, okay, we need it to happen now. That, in a great and ideal world, yes, that would happen. We're not in an ideal world where we've got to slowly get there. And we've got some really good players in place to pave the way for the future, too.
The easy argument is, of course, save the whales, pay the teachers, raise the salaries, do everything.
It's got to happen somehow in graduality.
Yeah, like, and they are taking those, like, steps. I mean, sure, and more revenues coming in. And I think that's what's really pretty cool about what we're getting ready to see take off with the WNBA. Now, let me ask you this question, Sam.
Sure.
We're currently in May.
Season are we? Off.
Yeah, okay.
It's going to be May.
Sometimes. Currently in May, the season tips off next week, runs through the summer. Will you be tuning in
to the WNBA? No.
Yes.
The reason being is I don't watch the NBA either. Like, I just, when it gets to the, I don't. And I, for what, I love every Purdue Boilermaker that comes out, but I have not watched any Purdue Boilermaker play pro basketball since Glenn Robinson was in the league, and that was in the 90s. So, like, I just don't. And it's almost the same way with the way the game is now at the college level, but there's still some semblance of school pride. That's why I like college basketball, is there's, you're playing for the, take it for what it's worth, you play for what's on the front of the chest, not on the back of the jersey, you know, in front of the jersey. It's more that way now, even though kids are getting paid for their play now.
Well, and I mean, the play style in the game is just so different in the NBA. Where, yes, I used to be a diehard NBA fan, and I've fallen off in the last 2 years. Like, the playoffs, I'm
I'll watch the playoffs. So WNBA playoffs, I will watch.
Okay.
But I just don't watch regular season.
And that's, like, there's no judgment or anything. I'm just curious, maybe, what some of these, and listeners love to hear comments from.
Yeah, absolutely. People.
About if you're going to be tuned into the WNBA season. Because one thing I do find interesting about this, Sam, like, I haven't watched, I don't think I watched a NBA regular season game all year, maybe one, maybe two.
If I did, it was accidentally, or my sons had it on and I walked by while it was on. That's the only way.
But, you know, it also competes with me and my viewership habits with men's college basketball and women's college basketball. Well, and yep, that takes up really all my time during those months. During the summer, MLB's kind of lost me. I haven't really adopted to, what is it, the USFL now? I think it's
USFL. It's the just UFL. Because, okay, the XFL and the USFL combined, so they just call it the UFL, the United.
Okay, Football. Okay. I knew there was a merger, but I couldn't remember what the name was. They probably should have just kept with the XFL for brand awareness. But anyhow, I'm not really watching any of those, so I will find myself, I'm pretty positive, watching some of the WNBA games. And I'm just curious if anybody else feels that way too, where they're looking for something, they're hosting a party on a summer weekend night, and they're putting something on the TV. I think the WNBA is going to find their way and on.
Please,
a lot of those,
please, listeners/viewers, don't take that as, well, he's going to watch the WNBA by a last resort. It's just,
correct,
regular season pro basketball is not the best basketball to watch.
It's at least for our interest. Like,
at least for our interest. And if you love it, good on you. You have at it. It's just not what we see as. It's not as competitive as even pro playoff basketball, because then at least you're playing for something, you know, at that point, you know. You survive in advance, whereas in the regular season, you know, you'll have, and yes, it happens even at the, I'm sure it'll happen even at the women's level too. You have stars taking nights off just because they don't want to wear themselves out. Well, they're not taking days off in the playoffs, you know? So, but to talk about, I mean, Indiana, last I saw for all of their regular season games, which they're playing at Gainbridge this year, they had like 700 total tickets for sale still. That's it. for the whole season. Now, I don't know if they're cordoning off parts of the of Gainbridge, but they may not be. I don't know that part. I just know the available tickets they have for all of their regular season games, they had like 700 total left.
How awesome is that?
And I that's mean, seriously, yeah.
Who would have thought we would have seen this day, especially as quickly as it came? I mean, a couple of years ago, I mean, this wasn't a thing. Like, the blossom and rapid evolution that we're seeing in women's basketball, both collegiately and professionally, I think is unprecedented in sports. Like,
did anybody see this even when Caitlin Clark was like a sophomore doing good things? Like, did they see? Not I just, I know it's not just Caitlin Clark. There are plenty of other great basketball players that are coming into the league and doing great things, but she's kind of the catalyst. Let's say it that way.
Absolutely.
Did anybody see the blow up immediate blow up of the WNBA and the women's game when 3 years ago, when she was a sophomore going into or freshman going into her sophomore year or COVID season, whatever you want to call it?
I think you noticed she was gaining a lot of attention. I think you knew that she was obviously one of the best players, but to this degree, and honestly, it's what's amazing about it too, Sam, is like with Caitlin Clark, besides just being a great player, because she's obviously a great scorer, the all-time leader sure. in college basketball, great passer that maybe goes a bit under the radar. But she's also a show woman. I mean, she is a performer out there. She plays to the crowd. She plays with a flair. Mm-hmm. And that has captured a lot of different people's attention. And that's part of it. And I don't know that we necessarily saw it to that degree, especially 2 years ago. But think of all the moments she had. She had the buzzer beater winner against Indiana last year, or 2 years ago now. Last year, had the buzzer beater against MSU. The way she broke the record. A logo three in transition
after like, scoring the first 8 points of the team by the team.
You know, there's some like sports icons and athletes throughout history that didn't just have a way of being really good, but they had a way of putting punctuation marks on moments. Right. And like, think about Michael Jordan, like the tear of the jersey and the double fist pump after he hits the shot against the Jazz.
There are two iconic moments that I remember about Michael Jordan. One in the, I believe it was the late 80s, maybe the early 90s, when he hit the buzzer beater against the Cavs to win the series. Yep. And he turns around and pumps and, you know, and does almost the pre-Tiger pump almost. Yeah. Like he's just, yeah. you know, and then the push off that wasn't called a push off to win the title against the Jazz in game six. Those are the two iconic moments that I remember from Jordan.
Well, and even think about Tiger again, too. I mean, you bring up the Tiger fist pump. Yeah. Remember the chip in on 16 and 2005? Where it
sat on the hole and then went in? Oh, yes, that was...
And then it's just accentuated by the fist pump. Like, there is something to that aspect of this, and Caitlin Clark has that as well. Like, she's got that same kind of flair, that same style that so many of the greats have had, and that... Because it's not just her great play that's doing this. It's that part as well that's transcending this entire thing.
Well, it's something about the greatest, and I'm not getting into any of the debates or anything, but it's something about the greatest showing their emotional kid side of doing something good. Because Michael Jordan, he was meticulous. I mean, even Kobe Bryant did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a meticulous surgeon like in what they did, but then they hit a shot and you just see them go boom. You know, you saw Jordan starting putting up fingers while he was celebrating, you know, like, you know, and you know, Tiger watching that and he's watching it. And you can see that little kid thing. And then all of a sudden, yeah! Same thing with Caitlin Clark. You know, she's very emotional and think what you want about her. I don't care. She's one heck of a great player and she does have an emotional side, which is not a bad thing at all. Mm-hmm. Now it can go too far. Players can take it too far with their emotions, but it's great to have emotions because once you stop caring, then you stop losing your edge.
But
losing your edge.
Yeah. Well, and to your original question, I think that's the real thing. Like, I don't think anybody saw those iconic moments 2 years ago when Caitlin was a sophomore. That those things
a little bit more reserve at that point.
Yeah, you can predict those. And the way she punctuates those moments, I think just continued to elevate the crowd that kept coming through the door for women's basketball. Yeah. And now here it is for the WNBA, and it's going to do, I think, some pretty special stuff.
Think what you want about what, you know, women's sports or whatever, but there ain't no men's basketball team that sold out 50,000 seats at a football stadium for an exhibition game. Okay.
Yeah.
That granted. And that's Iowa. Indiana's a state that loves its basketball. This is Iowa doing that. So that's telling you, and I'm not saying it's exclusive to have great crowds in Indiana. I'm not saying that at all, because neither of us live in Indiana anymore. So it's not like it's, but it's our home, and we know what basketball's like in the state of Indiana. And for it to be like that in Iowa, and it, that means it's starting to grow out further.
Oh, and being a native Hoosiers like us, I remember telling people all the time when we would talk about
get it.
Best host cities for Big Ten championships. And I'm like, Indianapolis, because if there's a ball bouncing in a gym, we don't really have anything better to do or that we would rather do.
Especially during that time of the year, you realize it's like 30 below zero, right?
Other states have other interests, and that's fine. But basketball in Indiana, like, that's what we are just –
There's a reason why. There's a reason why, and it's not cliche. I think it really is true. The statement of in 49 states, it's just basketball.
Yep.
In Indiana, it's a way of life. My grandpa – coached for 30 plus years in the state of Indiana high school basketball. And that's where I get my love from college and high school basketball now, is because we would sit and watch basketball. If there was a basketball game on, my grandpa and I were watching it. If we were together, it didn't matter who it was, we were watching it. And it's just a different thing. And that's where I get my love, because he broke down things like, they're doing that because, I started learning the game of basketball at a very young age. And that's the way it is in Indiana.
Yep. It just is. So real quick, I think we've covered a lot. And again, listeners, let us know what you think with the WNBA. If you're going to be tuning in, how you feel maybe about some of that, because like that many eyeballs watching those games, where like we believe there's going to be some momentum carry over. So let us know if you're going to be a part of that.
Yeah.
But
even if it's just the playoffs,
you're right.
Like me.
But before we end up closing out the show, we wanted to talk for a moment a little bit about Big Ten basketball again, because that's what we love. We're sickos for Big Ten basketball. But,
and don't get us wrong, we will talk football once it starts up a little bit more in earnest. But like now, since we don't have anything really happening and cooking right now with football, we're going to revert back to basketball.
Well, and I think, too, on the football topic, like, look, the topic we're going to talk about here is, at this point, early to mid-May, who are maybe the favorites to win the Big Ten. In football, I think Sam and I have already had this conversation a little bit. I think we see it between Ohio State and Oregon for the most part, right?
Yeah. I mean, unless something drastically changes, I think we came to the consensus that, not saying either one or not one another team could jump up there, but just with everything that we see right now, it's Oregon or Ohio State. It's just the way it's going to be. I mean, not to say USC can't jump in there or Michigan couldn't. We just don't have those pieces made yet. We can see Ohio State and Oregon.
So the football part's kind of taken care of. Now, when you segue over to basketball, especially with all the movement we've seen,
yes,
who's the favorite in Big Ten basketball today?
Well, you're going to have many saying that Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Many are going to say probably IU. I would contend, and it's not me being the homer that I am, I think Purdue's going to be damn good next year. Mm-hmm. They've got six coming in, freshmen coming in, and they're all pretty highly touted. I don't know that they've got the best recruiting class from the Big Ten, but they've got the 10th best in the country. So if there's anybody that's better, there's not many that are better in the Big Ten. So I think that the freshmen that they've got coming in, with what they still have in the cupboard, I think could make them a top 3-4 team in the Big Ten. I don't know enough about USC, but they're getting a lot of decent transfers in. So those three, I guess, would be my top three is Illinois, IU, and Purdue, probably. I don't know. there's still so many moving pieces yet that can happen. But I know you, knowing that, you know, everybody and their brother on each roster, that you probably have a different list.
Not even necessarily. I mean, it is early to mid-May, and I'm kind of treating it as such, where it's rather fluid.
Yeah.
I see those three being up there. The biggest question marks, I mean, Indiana, how do those pieces fit together?
Right.
I don't hate the pieces at all.
They added a shooter. They added a really good shooter with Luke Goody from Illinois. So, I mean, they did address some of that outside, but I'm with you on that. I don't know enough about their roster to say, yes, they're clear cut. Or Illinois with all their transfers and adds in and their freshmen. Yes, they're clear cut. You know, I don't.
And with Indiana, I mean, you got Ballo, you got Mbako, you got Renew. Like, that's a lot of size and a lot of guys that kind of play the same position. So I want to see it. I just don't know what that ends up looking like.
Is that a one and done with that many people? I mean, I guess Renew probably has got to go after this year. But like this transfer class is going to be one and done, basically. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of post presence that they're not used to having, you know what I mean? And yep. is that a matter of, you know, are they putting too many chiefs, as so to speak, into the mix?
So I do think they're up there. Purdue, I definitely think, is in that conversation. I'm curious because the offense worked so well with Zach Edey garnering so much attention.
Yeah.
That either somebody's got to – I mean, you can't fill those shoes. But somebody's either got to command attention like that in some similar fashion at a minuscule level. And the guards are going to have to take another step up. And it's not to say that the guards were bad. But, I mean, they just are going to have to – become more shot creators than what we've seen throughout this last season. And again, that's not a slight against them. I just think that's the road ahead for Purdue.
I think Purdue's got gain an identity, where their offense is going to come from. You know, they've just got to gain that, not that they can't get it and not that it's not going to be easier than other teams trying to find their identity after a huge presence like Zach Edey would come through. I think they've got enough there that knew their role. And I as a secondary, that they're like, hey, once he's gone, we're going to be expected. So they're going to be able to step up, but they still need to find that identity. I think that's a big thing right there.
And I believe in the X's and O's of Matt Painter a lot too. Like when you watch some of the film and some of the stuff Purdue does offensively, like I believe that they'll be creative in some ways to help and maybe because I do believe, and again, this isn't a slight, this is a team that went to the championship game. I'm not tearing them down, but if you were to find a weakness, it's probably shot creation outside of throwing it into Zach Edey and playing ball.
In fairness, they didn't need to do anything, but I mean, they were taking their strength and just saying, beat us.
Yeah.
And there were only five teams that did that all year last year.
Yep. And really, UConn just could because they threw Klingon at him. And it was like the first time for a long time we were like, oh, one-on-one. Like,
yeah. I mean, because you're right. Because had they had a 6'10 guy, they would have had to have doubled him.
Mm-hmm.
Or he would have had 60, you know. And but like Klingon was at least comparable in height and comparable at least to be able to push on him and and defend him at least enough to keep him down at 38. Well, it's amazing that 38 is down.
Yeah, and UConn's the outlier here when we're talking
correct.
About
this. Yes.
Like, that's the thing to keep in mind, too. Teams don't have the athletic length on the perimeter and a seven-footer that can go toe-to-toe with Zach Edey, especially in the Big Ten. I mean, there aren't many rosters built like that.
Many times Purdue lost, it wasn't because they had the length on the perimeter. It was the perimeter extras weren't hitting shots.
Correct.
So Edey was getting his.
They were doubling Edey a lot too,
and they were doubling Edey.
Open shots on the perimeter.
Correct.
Yeah.
UConn wasn't giving him that.
Yeah. So much to that point, though, I believe Matt Painter will be able to help in some of that area of maybe a lack of shot creation. So I got Purdue up there, got Indiana up there. I like Illinois up there. Other teams that interest me. Curious to see what Jake Diebler does with a first full season and what he's brought in. I think it's interesting. I don't think they win the Big Ten, but I think they could be up in that conversation.
How about Michigan?
I was going to say, look, I know my interest and allegiance is Michigan State, but what Dusty May did in this portal to kind of start from scratch,
yeah,
it was pretty impressive. I like the roster he put together. I'm curious to see what they can do in year one because, again, they're coming off of a historically bad season this
year. Yes.
Historically bad.
When you go 3-17 in the Big Ten, that's really, really bad. It's bad.
So I'm curious what they do.
Yeah.
Also curious about, I'm just going through teams at this point.
How about
Nebraska?
The mayor?
Nebraska takes a hit because Rink Mast is out for the upcoming season. He got injured about a week ago. Yeah. So even though they brought Connor Sejan in, they take a big hit with Rink Mast being hurt. I think Michigan State's really interesting getting Frankie Fiddler in there. I think that helps the pin down offense a lot. I think when Jeremy Fears gets back and healthy, him running the high pick and roll in late shot clock situations, I like his decision making. Go ahead.
I hope Tom Izzo has a play called the roof and it's him at straight away three so that he can Fiddler on the roof.
That has to be used at some point, right?
Has to, right?
questions with MSU, I think, still remain at the five spot. Jackson Kohler comes back, and of course he was kind of handicapped with the injury last season. Maybe with the full summer, maybe he gets back to a little bit more of what his potential could be. That's really the question there. But I'm also curious, the other team I'll throw in here in the mix is, and I've named six teams, so this is already a really
well, there's 18 of them in the conference, so you really can you're not, unless you go 12 deep, you're not going overboard.
Well, the team that I don't think really this is a conversation about them winning it, but this is going to be must-watch TV next year, Rutgers. Because they bring in Dylan Harper, who Raphael Davis, I saw, posted this about a week ago. He's going to be the best Big Ten freshman since D'Angelo Russell.
Yep.
And I don't think he's wrong. Harper is – he's a stud. And
now,
I'm curious what he does.
Is he the Ron Harper – family?
Yes.
Okay, so he's the younger brother of Junior.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And
knowing what Ron Harper Jr. was, to think that he's gonna be better, I'm not saying Ron Harper Jr. was a stud, but he was darn good
at
Rutgers. So if you're saying he's gonna be a better, if Raphael is saying he's gonna be the best freshman since D'Angelo Russell, wow, that's mind blowing.
He's the number one kid in this class. He's that good. And he landed at Rutgers. So Steve Peichel has got to be very elated.
But they lost Cliff Amore.
Correct. They need some help in some places, but that's going to be must-watch TV because that kid is special.
Well, and basketball, we've talked about this too, is basketball is a different sport to where one player can completely turn the flow of the game and turn the tide to a team if he just gets a hot hand and starts tearing it up.
Yep.
Even if you're trying to defend him, if he's that good, he's going to make his way and he's still going to get his.
CC Boo Booey.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. there's a reason why Chris Collins has a job and it's Boo Booey and Chase Audige. But then to say there's a reason why they went back to back. Granted, Collins is a good coach, but Boo Booey was the catalyst there. And there's a reason why they went back to back years and Boo Booey is the man. There were games that I would tune in or just turn the channel and be like, oh, they're halfway almost to halftime. And that's Boo Booey's 25th point. I'm like, what? it's amazing what he could do. And if Harper could easily do that, if he's as good as people think he's going to be.
It's certainly going to be exciting, and it's always exciting to talk Big Ten basketball, even though it's early to mid-May, as we currently sit.
Early May, and we're getting all hyped up about the next basketball season.
That's the show, man. That's what we do here. But speaking of this show, if anybody missed it or doesn't really know where to find us, Sam, where can they find us?
Well, I haven't added the TikToks back on there because I was notified by Tony, our longtime third, or fills in for you when you can't make it, that we are posting occasionally on the TikToks. So on the TikToks, the Instagrams, and the platform formerly known as Twitter, we are at B1G underscore talk. That's B1G Dalton, not B-I-G. Hold the face. There you go. One, you're number one. Just remember that. But then on Facebook, it's B1G Talk, Big Talk, not all Big Talk. Those are great people over there, I'm sure. But that's not us. So go to B1G Talk, Big Talk on Facebook. We are streamed every Friday on the ASAP network. Excuse me, every 9 o'clock Eastern every week on the ASAP network, and then our audio podcast is available later that day through the Lounge Media Group. And if you want to, if you missed the stream and want to catch the stream later, go to Spotify and you'll find it there. And my device is resetting like every 5 minutes. I need to figure out what's wrong with it. My voice activated device. I'll say it that way. That way it doesn't, but like you get the blue ring going around it every couple of minutes. I'm like the dog from Up. And squirrel, oh, you know, and so like every time I see it go around, I look and see what's going on with it. So,
well, we can start the weekend off with some technical support for Sam and everybody else. Try and enjoy it even a little bit more than figuring out your own devices in your house. But for Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. Thank you all so much for joining us for another episode of Big Talk, College Sportsman Midwest Perspective, Blue Collar and Blue Blood. Have a great weekend, everyone. So long.
See ya.